Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues that industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
Welcome to Chip Chat. My name is Allison Klein. We're coming to you live from South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, in the Intel AI Lounge. And I am delighted to be with Dr. Don Nafis, Senior Research Scientist at Intel.
Hello.
So, Don, I don't know if you remember this, but we met a year ago at South by Southwest. So this is like our one-year friendiversary.
Yeah.
And you were giving a talk about AI algorithms and things that could go wrong. But before we go there, why don't you go ahead and just give an introduction to yourself about what you do at Intel? What does it mean to be a social anthropologist at Intel and the Intel labs?
Sure. As you said, I'm in the labs. I do a lot of research working with everyday folks, trying to figure out, you know, how people interpret technologies, what they're going to need in the future, what they value, where can we sort of direct technology so that they're actually meaningful to people's lives. So that's mostly what I spend my time doing.
Now, fast forward a year, you're here doing book signings and supporting a book that just came out around self-tracking. Tell me about that.
So the self-tracking book is really about taking a step back and trying to understand kind of where we are with wearables, digital health apps, that kind of thing. Talking about what's actually worthwhile about this stuff, what's maybe a little bit disappointing sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that a lot of the innovation that happens in that space is really user-driven stuff, right? People figuring out what weird and wonderful data sets they want to collect or repurpose from an activity tracker, and people figuring out really wonderful and personally meaningful stuff about diseases they have, you know, things that trigger their migraines, whatever it is. So the book looks at that. And then it also looks at some of the broader questions about how we as a society sort of deal with data of that type. How does it make its way into clinical settings? Should it make its way into clinical settings? How do we deal with data access? Who has the right to access this sort of data and on what terms?
Should there be a point where trackers are required for certain types of access? That would be an interesting conversation too. So let's back up.
Sure.
When you look at the average user of a self-tracking device, mm-hmm. what is the use pattern there in terms of engagement? And what do we know about what they're actually using that data for?
So a lot of people sort of first port of entry is an activity tracker. I happen to be wearing one now. And what tends to happen is there's a kind of an initial sort of honeymoon period where people get really, really into this stuff and want to get their 10,000 steps or whatever it is, and a period of real deep engagement. And then there comes a point, often it's about a month, month and a half, where they frankly often get put in drawers. Mm-hmm. And that can be one of two things, right? Either the person's actually learned what it is they need to learn from the activity tracker and shifted their habits or whatever it is, and they often say, I now know what it feels like to have a 10,000 step day, right? I don't need to keep track forever and ever. And that's actually a fine thing. There's also people who are like, yep, not for me. There are some people who actually just keep wearing the thing and find themselves in a situation where that data becomes a baseline for something that they never knew was going to happen to them.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
Okay.
Most. Tell me about those people and what they actually do with that data on an ongoing basis.
Well, there was a report in a Journal of Emergency Medicine that came out, I think, last year. And it was an account of a man who was a Fitbit wearer who came into the emergency room with a cardiac problem. And I'm not going to get the medical terms exactly right, but essentially the course of treatment, if you had had this problem before, was one set of things. And, you know, if it was an ongoing problem that was just particularly acute, if this was the first time, it was a different kind of problem entirely, different medical treatment. And the problem is if the medical personnel got it wrong, the person would be in far worse shape,
right?
And so they broke open the Fitbit data and actually figured out that this guy had had this problem before and got him the appropriate treatment. And now, he didn't anticipate this was ever going to happen.
That $99 investment in a Fitbit became a pretty good investment
exactly,
at that moment.
Exactly, yeah.
You talk in the book about access. And this is, I think, a really hot-button issue because a lot of people like the idea of tracking their own data. Some people share that data with their social networks and, you know, feel more comfortable with that. But you got to wonder, where do those lines start getting a little sketchy?
Right.
Tell me what you think.
You know, we are in a place where it's worth thinking about, you know, who are the right people to share data with? And how do we sort of interrogate these devices to make sure that when we say we have a certain set of expectations about where it's going, that those expectations are more or less fulfilled, right? It's one thing to kind of overshare on your social media, right? And Lord knows lots of people like to do, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. The place where I start to get excited is really areas where these wearables are starting to be used for public health research. And that's a different kind of sharing entirely, sort of pooling together data sets, you know, across a community or a particular population. There's a particular problem. And that can be done either coordinated by a university researcher or, as happens occasionally, actually coordinated by people who are saying, look, we think we have this problem and we're going to turn to data to try to figure it out. It turns out that in medicine, there's actually a pretty long history of this stuff, right? If you look at the early days of the AIDS epidemic, who was doing the research, right? It was actually AIDS patients themselves.
Right.
This is stuff people can do and get involved in. Getting a researcher on board helps.
Sure. But,
so that's what I think sharing might increasingly mean.
When you look at that, is there concerns around privacy within the devices themselves? And are we, as an industry, doing what we need to do to ensure that it is a patient choice versus, you know, corporate data gathering that is releasing this data?
The scene shifts all the time. So we can't paint the picture with a broad brush. But certainly there are areas of security that constantly need to be improved upon. There are also issues we run into with corporate wellness programs where sometimes they can be incredibly successful, right? And other times it's worth asking some pretty hard questions about where data is going and why it's being collected, and potentially actually helping firms and wellness companies and insurers make better choices about what's actually meaningful data at all. And it might not, in fact, be activity tracker data.
Now, the book is called Self-Tracking. It was published by MIT Press, and you actually had a co-author from the University of Oxford. Tell me about that collaboration.
You know, it was wonderful. I can't say enough about my co-author, Gina Neff. The way we worked was, we actually at Intel had a, through our university research office, a fairly sizable research program called Biosensing in Everyday Life, which really tried to ask, okay, if these things are going to become widespread, what are the sort of the social enablers, the social barriers, that kind of thing. So Gina participated in that program looking at healthcare institutions and the use of data in clinical care settings and the sort of the gray line between medicine and not medicine. And so we divided up the work where I took on a lot of the questions to do with kind of strictly consumer uses, and she looked at the clinical side, and it was a wonderful, I have an academic background and I don't get to play academic very often, and that was particularly wonderful to be able to do.
You also work in the Intel Labs, which is always doing some very exciting things. Tell me a little bit about the other projects that you have going on.
One project that I'm particularly excited about is some software called DataSense, which is a tool designed to help people without statistical backgrounds actually start to look at this data and start to find patterns in it. So we do things like, folks who don't work with data often get tripped up with things like timestamp alignment. And so we kind of help ease those things, and we also make it very easy to explore patterns in time, patterns in space, generate correlations. And we did that because we discovered through our research in Quantified Self that actually people are pretty good at, when they see a pattern, people are pretty good at spotting why that might be in the context of their own lives, right? If it's data that's cold and out there and you really need a lot of math for, average layperson is not going to be particularly successful. But if it's in context, then they have a lot of stories to tell and a lot of reason to know. And so that's why we built it.
Tell me a little bit about how you develop something like DataSense in the labs, and then what is the path to actually drive it to broader use?
We went through a lot of tight iteration cycles, working with both designers, engineers, as a matter of fact, a machine learning specialist currently, because we were hoping to get an inferencing feature going. And so it was a lot of build and test. I spent a lot of time getting some very rough software in front of people to sort of find out where it's going wrong. And as we started testing it, you know, we started to find that self-trackers were not the only people who had a need for a kind of an introductory tool even before you get to Tableau. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of places like higher education and non-STEM fields. We've sort of trialed it in anthropology classes,
if you can
believe it. And with community-based environmental health people who want to know what's going on in their air. So as a matter of fact, we managed to show some of it at the National Academy of Sciences last fall.
That's fantastic. Very cool. Well, one final question for you. I know that you're here signing books, so I'd assume that those who are at South by Southwest and want to pick up a copy of Self-Tracking can do that at the bookstore at the conference.
Yep.
But if people are listening online, where can they find that book?
If you Google NAFUS, N-A-F-U-S, and Self-Tracking, it'll come up. It should be coming up on Amazon. The press is MIT Press. So if you go on the MIT Press website, it'll be there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. I know that this is a busy week for you. Thanks for taking time for ChipChat.
Thank you.
Visit ChipChat online at intel.com/chipchat. And for more information on data center technologies, visit intel.com/bigdata, intel.com/cloud, and intel.com/datacenteroptimization.